Today we explore the subject of Jewish peace activists in this country and in Israel. To outside observers, Jewish communities around the world appear monolithic in their blind support of everything Israel does. But that is not true. There are many brave Jews in this country and around the world, including Israel, who regularly protest against Israel's egregious violations of human rights and international law, and are working hard to find a just solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Many Jews have visited Israel and Palestine and were transformed by what they saw. One such person is Dr. Alice Rothschild, Assistant Professor of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Biology at the Harvard Medical School. Dr. Rothschild co-founded Visions of Peace with Justice in Israel-Palestine, now the Boston chapter of the national organization Jewish Voice for Peace. And she organized with colleagues the Jewish American Medical Project, now the JVP Health and Human Rights Project. She traveled to Palestine in 2004 and 2005, and has since written and lectured extensively on issues related to women's health care and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Dr. Rothschild's recently published book entitled Broken Promises, Broken Dreams, Stories of Jewish and Palestinian Trauma and Resilience recounts her difficult journey into the conflict between her early beliefs and what she witnessed at first hand during her visits to Israel and Palestine. She joins us now from her home. Good morning, Dr. Alice Rothschild, and welcome to This Week in Palestine.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
First, let me congratulate you on your intensely human and beautifully written book. To me, it is as much a personal reflection on the meaning of your Jewishness as it is a chronicle of your painful journey through one of life's most difficult lessons, which all of us need to learn at some time or other in our voyage of self-discovery. The lesson of unlearning early truths impregnated in us by our families, teachers, colleagues, and others we meet on our journey. It is impossible to do your book justice in the little time we have, but here goes. Let me start by asking you, Alice, why isn't a nice Jewish girl like you writing a book like this?
Well, I think that, like many Jews growing up in the 50s and 60s, I grew up with a very strong love of Israel, and I went there when I was 14, and I saw a version of Israel that was beautiful and historical and romantic. And as I became an adult and a more politically savvy person, I really struggled to apply what I had learned in the feminist movement and the healthcare movement and the Vietnam anti-war movement and all the issues that I had been involved with. I really needed to use the principles that I had learned when looking at the issue of Israel and Palestine. So I thought it was a very personal need to understand things better and also to recognize that a story had been lost while our story had been told. And so, for me, I really needed to examine the Palestinian narrative, to examine the narratives of Israelis that are dissenting from Israeli policy, and to get a much more in-depth and nuanced understanding of why things are the way they are. So it's very personal.
You said that the painful unraveling of your Jewish family stories began in the mid-1990s. What started this unraveling?
Well, for many years I'd had this discomfort with the person I had become compared to the person of my childhood. And like many Jews, I just couldn't think of a way to talk about it. It always caused a lot of screaming and yelling when people opened the topic. And in 1997, a group of us from the Workman's Circle and several other Jewish organizations were sitting at the Jamaica Pond trying to figure out on Yom Kippur what would we do for our political action this year. And we realized that it was the year of the 50th anniversary of the Israel Day of Independence, and there was going to be a huge celebration in Boston. And we thought, well, let's put together a program, a peace program, where we'd have Israeli voices of dissent, Palestinian voices, rabbis, you know, people that could give a much more in-depth picture, and let's propose this forum for this big celebration, and then it will be refused, and then we can have a protest. And so we put together this forum, and we made the proposal, and much to the credit of the organizers, they accepted it. So we were then forced to really do this. So we started a Jewish-Palestinian dialogue group where we really learned each other's narratives and stories, and that led to a greater understanding and a greater commitment to struggling with this issue. issue.
In 1998, you met Israeli psychiatrist Dr. Ruchama Martin, whom I met a few years later and was greatly impressed by her personality and her formidable grasp of the dynamics of the situation. To what extent was she an influence on you?
She's been a very strong mentor for me. I first met her in Boston when she was at the Bunting Institute doing a peace fellowship. And I really became her friend and her student. And I have spent a lot of time interviewing her and talking with her and also reading a lot of the literature that she's written in the medical journals and political journals. And for me, understanding her journey, starting out in a Zionist pioneer socialist family in the 1930s and becoming radicalized by her experience in the army and her development as a political person and ultimately her commitment to human rights has been very critical in my understanding of the complexity of the Israeli experience and the psychological complexity, the political complexity. She's a very important person for me in understanding that. And I have a chapter about her in my book, so I can share that with other people.
Indeed. Shortly thereafter, you co-founded Visions of Peace with Justice in Israel-Palestine. Was that the turning point in your serious study of history and your listening to the other side?
That was really a vehicle to do this and to also find like-minded people who we could sort of co-educate each other. And I think the real turning point for me was meeting Palestinians and meeting dissident Israelis. And the more people that I met, the more human the story became and the more I could relate to it as a person listening to another person's pain and suffering and then talking about my people's pain and suffering and try to figure out how did we get into this huge mess. So I think it was a critical place, but it also became a way to do political organizing, to do education, and to introduce concepts within my community.
In your book, you said that public acknowledgement that Palestinians are equally human and deeply hurting is unthinkable, and a betrayal of Jewish loyalty and identity. Why is that, you think, and where is it coming from?
Well, I think that's a very important question because many people see the Jewish community as sort of a block of one-minded people, and really it's not. It's much more complicated than that. But there is a very strong stream of consciousness that doesn't see Palestinians as human. And I think the reason for that is that, or one of the reasons for that, is that the Holocaust was such a massive trauma to Jewish people, and the it became the justification for the formation of the State of Israel, or one of the justifications. And one of the things that is incredibly difficult for people to admit to is that in the midst of their own tragedy, that we created another people's tragedy. And one of the ways that you can tolerate that is by not seeing the other people as human. I mean, this happens over and over again in multiple historical moments. Starting, you know, we can look at America, we can look at many different historical moments, but this is how it becomes possible. And if you dehumanize the other, then you can do terrible things to them without admitting that you have done these things. So I think it's part of sort of an original sin that happened in the catastrophe following the Holocaust and with the founding of the State of Israel.
A few years later, you helped organize with colleagues the Jewish American Medical Project, now the JVP Health and Human Rights Project. And you went to Israel and Palestine in 2004 and 2005. What struck you most during these visits to Israel compared to your earlier visits as a starry-eyed adolescent of 14 in 1963?
Well, first of all, I was much older. But I think it was two very, very different experiences. You know, when I was a teenager, first of all, I didn't even know that there were Palestinians. You know, I did grow up with the idea of a land without a people and a people without a land. So I was ignorant of a whole side of the historical context. And when I went when I was 14, it was just a process of falling in love with this country. And it was a place that was magical. And it was a miracle that people who had survived the Holocaust could come to Israel. It was a whole different context. When I went as an adult, I was really interested in, first of all, health and human rights and in crossing lines. So I interviewed Israeli physicians and Israeli activists and rabbis, and there are a lot of different kinds of Israelis. And then I crossed the line, and I went into the West Bank, and I went into Gaza. And not only was I able to talk with people, but as a physician, I was also able to work with people. So one of the things our project does is to, through our collaboration with Physicians for Human Rights Israel and Palestinian Medical Relief Society, is to provide an opportunity for people to work in their area of expertise with their counterparts. So for me to do a clinic in a small village outside of Jenin and actually see patients and talk with them and you know, be real upfront and personal was an incredible experience. And it was like a different planet from the one that I saw when I was 14, when I didn't know anything about this. I was totally ignorant.
Is that project still open for people to contribute or go with the project again?
Right. We have had 4 delegations, and we are having another one in the fall. And we are certainly looking for people who are interested. And you can reach us through the website, jvpboston.org, and we're looking for people who would want to talk with us about going on this project. Yes, we do a yearly delegation.
And you will accept physicians and non-physicians?
Right. It's broadened to be teachers and lawyers and union activists and people in all different walks of life who are interested in honoring the narratives on all the different versions of the story, and also on acting in solidarity with Israelis of descent and Palestinians. And we really, we call it a boutique delegation. We really try to place people in places that where they can use their skills. So people who are interested in doing work, they can do theater work, they can do health work, whatever it is, we try to organize it so that it becomes a very powerful experience for the delegates.
Also, during your visits, you met an American-born Israeli activist, Gila Svirsky. Gila's account of a chance meeting with a Palestinian woman from Gaza was particularly telling. In a passage where she said, "I visited her in her beautiful home in Gaza. I didn't even know that Palestinians had bathrooms. Just like real people. And 8 months it took me to learn that Palestinians are normal like us." That, in a nutshell, captures the extreme demonization and utter contempt that Israelis have been brought up to have for Palestinians. And you gave many talks about your trips with the Jewish American Medical Project and what you saw. How were your talks received?
Well, I had a whole range of receptions. I think many people were very interested and horrified by what I had to tell them about the consequences of occupation, about demonization, about what's happened in Israeli society, because occupation also hurts Israelis. I also met a certain amount of hostility and resistance, and I think these are very painful topics to talk about. And, you know, the more Jewish an audience I had, the more difficult it was, because the more personal and painful the message was. So I've had the whole range. But clearly when you know, stick your head up above the radar, there's a hostility from certain segments of our population that just doesn't want to hear this.
Your book gives a badly needed human face to the conflict, something most books tend to ignore, perhaps because it is too painful. You give case histories of personal loss, anxiety, anger, and despair on the Palestinian side as well as the Israeli side, something that is almost never mentioned. In the little time we had left, could you take a couple of minutes to share a passage of your book with our listeners?
Sure. My book is a story of my own journey, and it starts out with my story and two other Jewish women and their stories, two Israeli women. And then I talk about interactions I had with many other kinds of Israelis, and then I cross over and talk about checkpoints. And then there's a whole section on experiences in the West Bank and Gaza. And the final chapter of the book, I come home and I use some very personal examples to explore the whole question of why is this so difficult to talk about. And this is what I'm going to read. "My ability to understand the role of Jews in the diaspora and our relationship to Jewish Israelis and Palestinians living on both sides of the Green Line is complicated not only by silencing within our own communities, but also by our own internal pain and self-censorship. Though most Jews have risen up the economic ladder beyond our immigrant forefathers in the garment industries, and the days of changing our names from Kleiner to Kenmore in order to find work are long gone, we often behave as a deeply wounded and emotionally defensive people. This existential trauma embraces centuries of anti-Semitism, the horrors of the Shoah, and extends to the boatloads of European refugees in the frightening, tenuous early days of the founding of the State of Israel. It is born of the machinations and betrayals of the dying Ottoman Empire, the British colonial enterprise, UN partition efforts, two world wars, newly formed Arab states, multiple smaller military conflicts, and growing national and religious movements. Jews are neither the sole victims nor the sole victimizers in this complicated history. By listening to the many narratives, I have come to feel that reducing the story to a battle between good and evil is disastrous and does not help us understand or work towards resolving the current dilemmas. I also believe that for Jews, religious and secular, in this era of ethnic politics, with the U.S. dominating and funding much of the discord, this conversation is no longer optional. A few years ago, I stood with a group of Jews at a Solidarity with Israel rally in Boston, holding a sign that read, "I stand with Israel against Sharon, against occupation." A white-haired bubby marched up to me, shaking her fist and yelled with a thick Yiddish accent, "You should have died in the camps." I can only weep at her level of raw, wounded rage. I suspect that in order to heal as individuals and as a people, we need to face our agonizing historical wounds and at the same time acknowledge the pain, contradictions, aspirations, and equal humanity of Palestinians caught up in our catastrophe. Perhaps never again needs to be embraced in its most universal sense, to mean we must never again forget the ability of ordinary men and women as well as governments to commit unspeakable acts of cruelty. Each terrible ordeal stands on its own. I ask you nonetheless, is it possible for us to acknowledge that our Jewish day of coming home was the Palestinian day of mass displacement? Our day of independence was their day of misfortune. Our new towns and cities are built on the rubble of their destroyed homes and villages. Is it possible to comprehend that the occupation begun in 1967, like all occupations, is a corrupting and atrocity-producing situation, starting at the level of the individual and extending to the policies of the state? Is it within our capacity to understand that Palestinian hostility is often a response to Israeli land acquisition and aggression, and that, as Ben-Gurion and Moshe Dayan admitted in the early days of statehood, they too would have fought back if they had been Arabs? Surely, if Jews as a people hungered for Zion for 2,000 years, we can imagine the yearning of a family dispossessed 57 years ago. Increasing military might, humiliating and suffocating an entire people, and building concrete walls will not resolve this human dilemma.
Thank you so much, Dr. Alice Rothschild, for being our guest today. It was a pleasure having you with us.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Dr. Alice Rothschild, Assistant Professor of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Biology at the Harvard Medical School, peace activist, co-chair of the Boston chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace, and author of the book Broken Promises, Broken Dreams, Stories of Jewish and Palestinian Trauma and Resilience. The book is highly recommended reading. It is now on sale in bookstores. You might ask your library to keep a copy on file. All proceeds for the book will go to Jewish Voice for Peace. For more information on the book, please go to the website www.brokenpromisesbrokendreams, that's all one word, brokenpromisesbrokendreams.com, where there are photos and further discussion of each chapter and a calendar of events. Dr. Rothschild is happy to do readings and discussions and can be contacted through the website.